Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we're doing a series of brief explainers for the end of the show during the membership drive through tomorrow. Today, we're going to talk about NFTs. You might have heard NFT in the same breath as cryptocurrency or blockchain. Maybe you've put some money into NFTs yourself. But what exactly is this modern and somewhat abstract investment tool, and how does it work? Joining me now to explain is Wall Street Journal reporter Dion Rabuin. Dion, I know I said your last name wrong. You want to say it for us?
Yeah, it's Dion Rabuin. Easy way to remember is you're going with Rabuin.
We're going with Dion Rabuin to launch the journal, who's going to launch the journal's inaugural YouTube channel soon, I see, and has an article on this investing trend. The article is called The Fractionalization of Everything. So Dion, start at the beginning for us. What does NFT stand for?
NFT stands for non-fungible token, which is just a fancy way of saying a thing that can't be replicated.
A thing that can't be replicated. Can you explain what non-fungible means in that definition?
Yeah, non-fungible basically just means replicable or repeatable. Kind of, it's a fancy investment term. So if something's fungible, you can make more of it or another one of it. So the idea behind NFTs is I'm selling you a token. A token can be anything from a painting or something that exists online, but I can't recreate it and sell 1,000 of them to all your friends. So you have the only one and you get to make your 1,000 friends jealous instead.
So was this one of your examples? The Mona Lisa is non-fungible because you can't replicate it. A stack of Mona Lisa posters from the Louvre gift shop would be fungible. So if these are non-fungible investments, does that mean people are actually investing to sort of own a fraction of, well, not the Mona Lisa, but something else that's one of a kind?
Yes and no. So the idea behind fractionalization is that you put something on the blockchain, and the blockchain is just this computer program where you have an exact digital receipt, or you know the equivalent of a receipt, and so you know exactly when this token or piece was created, who the owner was, who created it, and who bought it, and who owns it. So with all that in place, you can sell then pieces of that. So there's a digital record of who owns exactly, you know, 1/6 of, to use your example, the Mona Lisa. A lot of these NFTs are just the digital rights to things. So one example I used in the article was Playboy has started selling NFTs of some of its memorabilia, whether that be, big pictures of Marilyn Monroe, the centerfold issues, or of other celebrities, or different things that are in its library, like a Matisse painting. But you don't actually get, you know, individual pieces of those. You get to buy the digital rights to those pieces, and you own a fraction of the digital rights. So you don't actually get the thing itself, but you get the ownership of the digital rights or a portion of the digital rights to that piece of whatever it is.
So how does that,
make sense?
Kinda, but how does that actually translate into money eventually for the investor?
Exactly. A Marilyn Monroe centerfold, the original copy, right, is worth quite a bit of money. If you've got the negatives or you've got the actual original photo, that would be worth a lot of money. As time goes on, you would expect the value of that to rise. So you or I as an investor could buy a portion of that, and the value of that rises again because it can't be duplicated or replicated. The same thing if I were to put the digital rights to the Mona Lisa on the blockchain and then sell that. As the value of the Mona Lisa rises, the value of those digital rights to it rises, and therefore, you know, the $1,000 that I paid initially, well, I would hope that in 5 years, 10 years, that would be worth $5,000 or $10,000, and then I can sell that to someone else, I can give it to my children, or to a friend or a loved one, et cetera, et cetera.
Is there a larger economic implication to the existence of NFTs? Are they having a serious impact on the economy, or is this just kind of a, you know, boutique sort of corner of the investment world right now?
Yeah, the answer to that really is more of the latter. It is still a small corner of the investment universe. There still isn't a huge market for NFTs just because it's not well known and they're not as available yet. Certainly, regulators are keeping an eye on this space because you could, in theory, fractionalize anything. Like, I could theoretically fractionalize my house and then sell, you know, 1/100th of that to, you know, willing bidders on the internet or the dark web. The thing preventing ideas like that from really metastasizing and becoming reality is this fear of regulation, I would say, from the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, which hasn't yet said, okay, NFTs are securities, therefore you have to go through all these SEC processes and regulations if you want to do that. So the NFTs that are being sold are largely pieces of artwork that are created on the internet or, you know, images, things like that. And the SEC hasn't really stepped in to say, this is our domain and we decide what you can and can't sell and how you can and cannot sell it. As a result, it's just kind of a bit of what SEC Commissioner Gary Gensler has called the Wild West, where you can kind of do whatever you like, but you're not really able to get these things on, you know, a platform like Robinhood or like Schwab or TD Ameritrade, just because they don't want to get into this space and risk becoming a target of the SEC. That's made these things pretty difficult to get to and kept it to sort of a more niche audience. Mm.
Who wants it regulated more and why?
The folks who want it regulated are really on both sides. It's the people who are creating these NFTs. They say, hey, we'd really like some regulation, or we'd like you to tell us how you're going to regulate these. TD Ameritrade and Schwab and all the other folks would love to be able to offer these things on their platforms because that's more users. It's more things that users are buying and selling and, you know, more volume, and that creates more money for them. The folks who are on the other side who like the space the way it is, they would like the SEC to keep their noses out of it, just let things continue as they have. But again, if you're someone who's selling NFTs, you want to be able to sell on Schwab. You want to be able to sell on Robinhood because that's more customers. It's potentially more money. So it's really a mix of folks who like the space unregulated, unsort of varnished by corporate or government interest. But there's also people who would like that to happen so that they can, you know, invest or they can allow the sales on their platforms without fear of being targeted by the government.
Well, we're just about out of time, but you know how I know how mainstream the crypto world has gone now? I was watching the baseball playoffs the last few weeks, and one of the commercials for one of the sponsors calls the sponsor the official crypto marketplace of Major League Baseball. And, you know, usually they'd have the official beer of Major League Baseball, the official SUV, something like that. Now they have the official cryptocurrency marketplace of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, crypto has absolutely gone mainstream. And it's, you know, that remains a big question, is how crypto is going to be regulated. We saw the Bitcoin ETF come out on markets this week, and that was a huge hit. So this is obviously something that people want access to and want to be able to invest in. And it's going to be really interesting to watch it develop.
Wall Street Journal reporter Dion Rabowan. Dion, thanks so much. Really informative.